Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Microdose Gummies, available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code GRAVE to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. Again, that's microdose.com and code GRAVE. Today on The Grave Talks, what haunts the living room? A conversation with Amy Schaefer. The living room, a room with what sounds like a very positive name, initially was anything but. You see, the living room was originally named Living, for the living, a place where they could gather to grieve their dead before the days of funeral homes. If you happen to live in an older home, well, yeah, you can almost bet that that living room was probably used to usher some of your former family members or friends or acquaintances or, I don't know, whoever lived in that house a long time ago, into the afterlife. Amy Schaefer had one of those historic rooms in her childhood home, a home that would inspire her to seek answers to her endless list of questions about the dead. Today, we hear her stories on The Grave Talks.
Well, when I was a kid, my house that I grew up in is a very old house built in the 1800s. And I'm sure you probably have heard this before. There are some houses that they would be the funeral parlors. Mm-hmm. They were not every house had one. As you know, some houses just has one area of the house that they would hold their wake for loved ones from that area. Our house was it.
And what's interesting is that that's how the term living room got its name.
Exactly. I just found that out not too long ago.
Yeah. Just a fun little interesting fact there. Continue on.
Yeah. So I did not know about it for a while. And after I had started experiencing some stuff is when I had learned about this, about the house. My great grandparents bought the house. So my grandmother was born in that house. And so was my dad. So it's just kind of weird how that happened. I don't know of anybody who's died in the house except for when they've had their wakes in the house. I would experience seeing shadows in my room. One point in time, I woke up and I thought I was literally going nuts. I saw three figures standing in front of me. It almost looked like women. And I don't know what they were saying. It almost sounded like they were chatting. Of course, I hid under my covers because I thought I was nuts, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I remember when I was younger saying something to my mom. And my mom was like looking at me really strange. And she's like, oh, it was probably just me doing the dishes or something. And I'm like, there's no way I can hear you doing dishes downstairs. And plus, this was like 2 o'clock in the morning. Why would you do dishes at 2 o'clock in the morning? But the old house that we lived in upstairs, there was a closet or a little space way to connect the two rooms toward the back. And we used that closet. And down below was the attic. I never liked going in there. I could always hear noises coming from that attic, you know, and then my family always contribute to, oh, it's mice, it's bats or whatever. No, it wasn't that kind of a noise. But that's what I would experience in the house. Like I would feel like I was being watched, or sometimes I would see shadows while I was sleeping. And never afraid, but just odd. And then as time went on, I would experience different things. Like I would like ringing in my ear. And then sometimes when I'd have the ringing in my ear, I would get this flash of like somebody sending me this picture, and I'd be like, well, that's weird. Why would I vision that? You know, I'd like look at something and it would just like be a flash about something. And then I just kind of ignored it because I just thought it was nuts or something, like I was just daydreaming. And I get so many deja vus and could never understand why I would always get those. I've always been interested in the paranormal, I think just because of growing up and in that house. And then, of course, when I started seeing it on TV, before I started seeing that, I always thought, what would it be like to be in a haunted house to try and communicate with spirits? What would that be like just to see their story and why they're still here? And then when I started watching shows on TV, I always thought, how can I do that? I don't know anybody that does that. I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I met this guy, just a fluke online, and who didn't live very far from me. And he's like, well, I do it. And so, so we got to talking, and that's how I really started to investigate, was with him. And then after we broke up, I started with one of the houses that I used to investigate. I got to be friends with him, and now I'm actually with his team. He's having a turnover of his team members, Jeff King with TSPI, with him. And then I'm also with a group out of Fort Wayne called Ghost Hunter Society of Fort Wayne. I've been in contact a lot with the owners of the Bell Mansion in Fort Wayne about helping them out with certain things. So a lot of interest. And I feel like sometimes it's such a rush that all this stuff is happening all at once. But it's so much fun. And I got to learn not only so much about that other world, but gotten to learn more about my spirituality, about myself, and about how other people lived and history. And it's just been amazing. So much stuff I've learned, not only from the spirits themselves, but from other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. So many things there to kind of unpack. Let's go back to early on when you were having those experiences in your house. Okay. And when you said to your mom, you know, what's going on here? And she's like, oh, it's just me doing the dishes, honey. And, you know, it's kind of shooed you off. But then things kept happening and they kept happening.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind as those things were you believing at that point? You know, the house is haunted. I don't care who else believes me, but it's haunted. Or did you think you were going crazy? What was the mind process there?
I think in the back of my head, I was like, the house is haunted.
Yeah.
You know, I did have that back there, but being like, you know, I think I was probably like six. I don't know, probably wasn't that young. Probably more like 10 years old, 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, I'm just a kid. You know, what do I know? It's probably just my imagination. You know, that's what a lot of people tell kids. Oh, it's just your imagination.
Yeah.
But I just knew deep down, I knew that what I was seeing, I saw it with my own eyes.
Sure.
You know, I was like, yeah, something is definitely I never was scared. I was just more curious than anything. Like, why would they come and visit me? Why am I seeing them? And why is nobody else in the house seeing them? Mm-hmm. So.
And that's an interesting thing where it's always said, it's just your imagination. Because if you look back on it, my imagination still as big as it was when I was a kid, but I never manifested seeing anything because of my imagination. If there was something,
correct,
it's because it's there. You know, I always think that's funny. But like, what kind of imagination do you have that you can just manifest shit out there?
Right, you know, exactly.
Like that's some imagination you got there, Dad. Have you heard about microdosing? Have you? This is something that I've been very fascinated with, and I'm a huge proponent of. You probably heard about microdosing. If not, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Microdosing THC. Now, I'm a big proponent of that in general because I think it's amazing, and all of the horrible, disgusting prescription drugs that are out there that can totally destroy your body in every which way and form. I absolutely love if you can do it legally with THC, which now so many of our states have, but this is available to you nationwide, regardless of what your laws are or anything like that. Microdosing available anywhere. And that's why we're sponsored today by Microdose Gummies. I tell you what, this has helped me tremendously through my my surgery, my arm surgery. They gave me a big old bottle of pills and stuff that I said, I'm going to take as few of those as I possibly can. And I've been microdosing, honestly, this whole time I've had my my arm surgery. And it's helped me tremendously. Entry-level doses of THC that can help you feel just the right amount of good. It really is great. They taste amazing. They feel good. I've used them to help me get in the zone when doing creative work on the show. And I've used them also to chill, feel good. They're great. They're a 10 out of 10 for me. You should really check them out for yourself. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com. Use code GRAVE to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com and code GRAVE. So you have these experiences. You kind of in the back of your mind know that there's something going on. Did you continue to try and tell your parents about any of this stuff, or did you kind of just like it's a lost cause?
Well, I really didn't say anything to any of them, not until I have moved out and become an adult. And then when my grandparents passed away, my sister had moved into my grandparents' house. And one time when I was there, I believe my mom was there too, and I could smell my grandpa, and I just kind of like was kind of like sniffing a little bit, and my sister was looking at me and she goes, "You're smelling grandpa, aren't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, how did you know?" She goes, "I smell him all the time in the house." So then I was like, I looked at mom and I'm like, "You know," I said, I've had some dreams about my grandparents, like when my grandmother passed away, I remember speaking to my grandpa saying, "Is grandma okay? Do you have her?" And then in my dreams, he showed me himself and then him having a hold of my grandmother in his arms saying, "Yes, I have her." Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember telling mom about this, and mom's like, "You know, your grandpa and grandma's been in the house too." And I said, and then I made a joke, "Well, there's a lot more than just grandpa and grandpa in the house." And she just looked at me, and then I had that conversation with her about how I was seeing things. And she's like, "You know," she goes, she goes, "there's things in the house." She goes, "I just don't like to talk about it." And that's all was pretty much said.
So she was aware, but just it wasn't, she didn't want to look crazy, probably, is what she was getting at. Yeah.
Because my dad's a non-believer. He mm-hmm. is not, he's very skeptical. He's, a matter of fact, not happy with me of my choice of my hobby of doing this. So I can't talk about doing paranormal stuff around him, because that's just not something that, Christians are supposed to do, and that's just, but
has he ever had an experience that you know of that just
not that I'm aware of? Okay. No, he doesn't even talk about it. He won't even talk about it. So if we start talking about something about what you did the other night or whatever, and I'll tell him, "Oh, I did this investigation," he will sometimes just kind of get up and walk away and go to his office and watch TV or something.
That's interesting behavior. I mean, it's interesting with people who, quote unquote, don't believe that this is real or these sort of things are happening. Right. The average person who, seems to have that belief would just be like, "No big deal." Like they're talking about their stuff. Maybe they'll joke around a little bit. But when you get that glaring, "I can't be in the same room. Why is this going on? I'm really uncomfortable." To me, a lot of times, this is why I'm curious what your opinion is. It makes me think something did happen to this person, but they don't really want to process it, or they kind of have and they can't go any further, and they don't want to have any more confirmation that it's basically like a trauma. It's like correct. Yeah, it happened. Maybe nobody knows about it, and they never will. But they kind of lock up, and then weird kind of things trigger that. Reaction of just almost shutting down.
Correct. And that house that I grew up in, that parlor living area in the back of the house is now my parents' bedroom.
Ooh.
And what's really strange with that bedroom has such a different energy feel than any other room in the house. And I have always felt that. That room is the coolest room in the house. Always has been.
In terms of temperature, or it's really cool?
In terms of temperature.
Okay.
Even in the summertime, even when we didn't have AC in the house at that time, you know, my mom and dad would put an AC in that window, you know, and sometimes us kids would go in there and sleep on the floor when we were younger, to have a cool room. But even when they did not have it on and it was winter, you can always feel the temperature changed. And I always thought that was weird. Back then, I didn't even think about it. I didn't know any of that. But I just knew that room. And even now, when I walk back into that room, it is totally a different energy feeling. Nothing bad, but you can definitely tell that there's a different energy in that room.
When you have that energy, that different energy, as you said, and you described it as not being bad, I guess, you know, like, what kind of mood would you describe it to be in? What is the feel of it other than just different?
Kind of like an energy of not knowing that you're not alone in that room. Like, maybe a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling, but more of like, are you being watched? Why are you in here? What's going on? Mm-hmm. Or like, hey, I recognize you, but you don't live here anymore. You know, just, I don't know, just a little bit odd. I remember when I was little being in there, that room always felt weird, but I didn't feel like scared or nothing like that. It's just different from the rest of the energy in the house. Like, even when you go upstairs to the bedrooms, upstairs has a different feeling than the rest of the feeling of the house. Because that's where I had a lot of my experience seeing the shadows and everything. Why I'm seeing them up there. And my bedroom was above the parlor room. So, you know, don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. I don't know. I don't know what that room was used for in the past. If it was a bedroom, I'm not sure. But so sometimes I did have a difficulty sleeping just because, you know, the energy, you know, at that time, it just felt weird. Sometimes I had a hard time sleeping, or I would sleep under my covers and don't peek out because I didn't know what I was going to see.
When you're feeling that energy, and this is just an opinion type question, and whether it's in that house or any place else where kind of it has that you're being watched feel, and there's two different types of, I think, being watched feels. There's the type that you got when you were a kid and you're on the playground and you know your parents are watching you. They're making sure you're safe, but you are being watched. But it's more of a I care for you watch. Or if you're with your significant other or somebody and they want to go over there, and it's kind of like, okay, I'll keep an eye out for you, you know, that sort of thing. And then there's you're walking down the closed down Kmart aisles in one of the last four in the country. Everything's out of the place. And there's some weird vagrant people kind of watching you as you slowly look for that last thing of Crest. Correct. That Crest at the end of the aisle. And you look, oh, it expired in 88. And you quickly leave. It's a creepy watching. That sort of thing. Two totally different types. But do you think that it takes that energy that's there to be conscious to get that feeling? Meaning, is it like a residual thing and the energy is just still kind of flowing in the room? Or is it more of a, you know, there's a spirit over here, a conscious spirit that's, you know, either watching because they care or watching because they're just creepy?
Yeah, that's a good question. It'd be one of those things that I would have to like investigate to figure out, but that's something my parents probably would never ever let me do, is investigate their bedroom. But with being an empath, that's how I go about with feeling of my energy. It's almost like whatever's there, I have to be careful a little bit so I don't absorb it too much, or it's a terrible feeling to, you know, get it off of me. But that's where, when I feel the energy, I can feel the feelings. I can absorb kind of like absorb their feelings with the shield around me. It's kind of hard to explain, but that's how I can tell, like, you know, are they mad? Are they annoyed? Are they happy? Are they excited? You know, and then sometimes I'll get like a little flash of them showing me, you know, their disappointment, or they want to show me something, show me their area, show me like, hey, look what I get to play with, or, you know, whatever. And that's how I go about it. Like with my parents' room, I guess when I go in there, I'm guessing it's probably a residual energy. I don't know how many wakes they've had in that house. I don't even know if somebody has passed away in that house. I've never asked.
Funeral homes or funeral parlors or rooms that were used for that repeatedly. I don't necessarily, and I'm curious what your thoughts are. I don't always think it, you know, it's the person who died that's hanging out here, because a lot of times they didn't hang out there. I think it's more so my thought process goes to, there's time after time, all these people, it's a funeral place, so hopefully most of them are in sorrow and not of a joyous occasion, but you know what happens. And so you have that whole thing of just utter sadness that kind of gets enveloped in the place, and you don't even have to be there to feel it. Funeral homes I've always thought were interesting, because I remember going into a couple when I was a kid, when a great uncle or aunt or a grandparent would die, and you're little and their parents are talking to stuff, and you kind of explore and you walk around. And yes, there's the psychological fact of knowing this is a funeral home, but there was, even when there was nothing going on, completely empty rooms, there's nothing that feels quite the same as a funeral home.
Exactly. You know, and that's why I'm kind of guessing that what's going on in my parents' room is more residual. It's everybody's energy has been kind of absorbed in that room over time. And that's why, you know, I kind of get that uncomfortable feeling in there at times. So in what time during the day they hold it? Is it all different times that, you know, one will never know? But yeah, it's, you know, even now when I investigate, you know, before I do anything serious with getting out any equipment or anything, I like to go around and feel the energy of the place before I do any investigating. It's almost like the place tells me where I should go first, or where should I stay away from. There's a place in Peru, Indiana. I think it's pronounced like Oki Pinoki.
Okay.
It's actually an Indian reservations ground or whatever. That's a very interesting set of land forest to be in. It's almost like when you get up to it, you can definitely sense a different type of energy. And it's almost like when I get to it, I have to ask permission to enter the grounds.
Mm-hmm. Do they ever say no?
I have never been told no, as far as there goes. Has been times where I've gone into a room and it felt weird, and like I can almost hear somebody say, get out. And I respect that, and I will sometimes leave.
So sometimes
I come back, probably.
Okay. that was going to be my question of if you ever did get the no when you're about to enter the place, would you be like, well, thanks for your opinion, I'm going anyway? Or would you be like, cool, I'm going to go to the Pizza Hut down the road?
Yeah, there was one time I was actually at the Ohio State Reformatory. Was walking down death row, just my ex-boyfriend at the time. I'm not even sure where he was at. I just told him where I was going. And he's like, okay, I'll catch up with you later. I walked down towards the end, just kind of talking and, you know, just tell him who I am and just say, I know you're probably getting tired of everybody coming down here. And I said, does anybody want to come and say hi or whatever? And I get down towards the end and I get this almost little disembodied voice or something and it said, get out. And I'm like, ooh, okay, fine. See you later.
Now, you heard this just with your ears?
Yes. Okay. It was a very slight, small get out. It wasn't mean. It wasn't anything. It just was like a whisper. Mm-hmm. And then I felt really uncomfortable. And this was, I had not been doing this for too long. So I'm like, fine, good, I'll go. And then when I was telling the guy I was dating at the time about it, of course, he didn't believe me. And I'm like, oh, it just feels weird down there. So then the next time we went back, I'm like, I am going to tackle that area. I'm like, that's the first place I want to get to, and I'm not going to leave this time. So I went down there, and I felt that same sort of energy. And got my dowsing rods out to try and communicate, because they weren't communicating through the box very well. And while I was trying to communicate, I saw very, very quickly, it looked like a small older gentleman peering out of the cell. Never looked at me. It was very quick. And I'm just sitting there like, holy crap. And I was like telling the guy I was with, I'm like, did you see that? Did you see that? And mm-hmm. I was telling him, he's like, none of my equipment went off. And I'm like, your equipment doesn't have to go off to not, you know, sure. That is my, you know, whole belief. That's another story. But I was like, but I was communicating through the dowsing rods. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, not believing what I was coming up with. And I'm like, okay, well then let's prove it. So the historian that was down there, I was telling him what was going on. I said, I told him what I saw. I told him about the guy that I was communicating with was probably in his late 50s. I said he seemed very skittish. He was in a cell a lot. He was afraid, and he was killed in his jail cell. And the guy just like looked at me and he goes, not very many people know that story. He said there was a guy in that jail cell. I can't remember what he said he was in there for. He was always being bullied by some of the other inmates. So before coming out of his cell, he would always peek around the corner to see if it was safe for him to come out. And then later on, he was strangled. They took a pillow and they suffocated him in that room, in that jail cell. So,
so when you're going and you basically recite the story that you really shouldn't have any knowledge of, it just right. kind of came to you. And you say to him, you know, here's what I felt. And he's like, oh, yeah, not many people know that story. Then he goes into detail. Right. What was going through your mind when he basically just confirmed to you that all these things in your head are accurate?
That was the first time I was like realizing what I could do.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I need to figure out how to develop this mm-hmm. skill. You know, and I think the last time I was there, what I was feeling was probably the bullies that maybe killed that guy. Of course, this is death row. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a female coming down death row. What females go down death row, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, because it was the guy's side, you know, and then later on, I just was noticing that over time that these flashes that I was getting was actually spirit sending me stuff. The most recent experience that I had was when I was at the Bell Mansion in Fort Wayne. We were upstairs in the ballroom, but at that time it was the ballroom, their entertainment room or whatever. And we didn't really get activity until we started playing music in their air. Then the activity started. On my one team from Fort Wayne, we've got a medium on that team that she can actually see. She can see and she can hear. I more or less go by feelings, flashes, than actual really fully seeing them. Every once in a while I do see shadows or I'll see something, but it's not like I can see them dancing around or whatever, or actually speak one-on-one with them, but she can. A couple of things that happened is that while they were dancing around, I got this flash of this man standing there looking at my friend Jessie. And as soon as I saw that, she turned around and she looked at me and I was like, was there a guy? And I described him and she laughed and she's like, you saw him, huh? And I said, I didn't really see him. I just got a flash. And she started, you know, so that was kind of neat knowing that, you know, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I saw this little girl skipping and dancing around. And you know, just having a good time. And the first thing that came to my mind that she was telling me was that her name was Claire. And the owners, the people that bought that house was Robert and Clara Bell. And when I had said something to one of the team members that investigate that house is like part of the team of the owners, I had said something to her and she was like, at first she's like, I don't know if I know anybody, but I'm like, okay, maybe it's just somebody else, it was whatever. And then the other guy goes, wait a minute, we've had, he goes, I think there is. Next door to the property there was a little girl, same age that I was thinking, 9 or 10, that would come over at times and play with the neighbor kids would come over and play because they didn't have any kids of their own. And so sometimes when they would have little parties that the kids would come over and play, and they had these little attic doors in the room and they would play in the room. And when they played music, they would dance around and skip around. And she's like, you know what? And her name was Claire. So when I said something to the owner, she flipped because she's like, not too many people knew that story. Not too many people knew that. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I've only had a couple of people that's come in contact with her. And I was one of them. So that was kind of neat to get that confirmation about that.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Amy Schaefer. In part two, are there any tools Amy uses to help communicate with the dead? Anything that maybe is used in combination with her own empathic abilities? And speaking of empathic abilities, how does one continue to develop those once you know you have them? Then has investigating the dead helped Amy learn more about her own spirituality? And how so? We'll talk about all that in part two to hear it. Become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Without that support, this show simply would not exist. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to the Patreon app and search The Grave Talks, or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Lots of ways to get there. It's only $5 a month. You get access to all of our bonus episodes, advanced episodes, and so much more. It's all there for you right now. It's all commercial free, too. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes to binge away on. Patreon and search The Grave Talks. We greatly appreciate that support. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Can I know where this life goes when I start?